Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back to Extra Shot, the weekly pod spilling the funniest stories in sport. I'm Jack. Zach is with me.
Hello, Jack.
Hello, mate. And producer George is here too.
Hello.
He's mic'd up and ready to go. Guys, we've got some exciting news to start with, which is our live show is happening 12th of June at the legendary Half Moon in Putney, previously played by the Rolling Stones. Is that true, George?
Yeah. Kate Bush did her first ever gig there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Sort of similar trajectory that we're on.
Well, hopefully we're on the Rolling Stones one, not the Kate Bush one, because I haven't heard from her in a while. Do I mean Kate Bush or Kate Nash?
Kate Bush.
Oh, Kate Bush played there.
They say you play the Half Moon Putney twice in your life, in your career. Once on the way up.
Once on the way up. Was she like 16?
Yeah, she would have been really young.
Okay. Well, if you want to hear some similar high-pitched voices to Kate Bush.
Are you going to wear the red dress as well?
Yeah, the Wuthering Heights.
Yeah.
I might do the dance moves. You know, they're quite creative, the Kate Bush ones. Anyway, yeah, if you want to join a bit of podcast history at the Half Moon, we will be there 12th of June. I think the plan is discuss the biggest wrong-uns of the Euros, the forthcoming Euros?
Yeah, we haven't completely decided on the concept, but possibly an England wrong-uns rundown or wrong-uns of this Euros.
Because the Euros starts 2 days later. So think of it as a Euros preview show, but instead of talking about like Slovakia v North Macedonia, we'll be digging into some of the great scandals that have afflicted players in the tournament. We'll also dig out a few of the stories too sordid to share on the podcast. Mm. So it's a rare opportunity to hear those. If you want to come, tickets are available now using the link in the podcast description. So get on there, pick one up, and we will see you on the 12th of June for what promises to be a thriller. And we've lined up a few guests already, a few special guests. JP has tentatively said yes. I think Mickey and Rasheen are in as well. But we'll keep it a bit more surprising than that. So you'll have to come and see. Hit the link in the group description. Now, Zach, apparently you've got a correction for us.
Yeah, I'm afraid I have to start today's episode with a correction. So in our John Terry episode that came out on Tuesday, I incorrectly claimed that former Swansea winger Scott Sinclair was a part of John Terry, Frank Lampard and Ijeka Johnson's riotous bender the day after 9/11. I was, of course, actually referring to Frank Sinclair of Leicester, not Scott Sinclair. So I'd like to offer my unreserved apologies to Scott Sinclair, who also would have been 12 at the time of this event. So he was anywhere near a riotous pub crawl. He was also, to my knowledge, didn't spend the day after 9/11 flashing his knob at grieving American tourists at Heathrow's Holiday Inn. He did not throw up in front of them. He also was not left naked at a bus stop. And I can categorically clear up that he did not throw himself headfirst down the lanes at Heathrow's on-site bowling alley and did not have his head almost removed by the mechanism. Yeah, Scott Sinclair, if you're listening, then my deepest apologies. Frank Sinclair, I think you've got some questions to answer still.
But just clarify, Frank Sinclair did do all
Frank
that.
Sinclair did those things, most of those things, yeah, according to reports.
Just not Scott.
But not Scott Sinclair.
He was doing his maths homework at the time because he was 12. Sorry about that, Scott.
Sorry, Scott.
We have edited.
Caught in the crossfire.
We've edited the episode.
Yeah, we've changed it now. But in case you're getting any dodgy DM, Scott, then apologies.
George actually made me shit myself because he mocked up, you know, when Callum Hudson-Odoi was put on the Epstein list.
Yeah.
Or he thought he'd been put on the Epstein list. There was a list going around and he did an Insta story being like, it wasn't me, I was 12 at the time. And George did an edited version of that that was from Scott Sinclair and sent it to us. And I shat myself.
Didn't JP also fall for it?
Yeah, JP also fell for it. So yeah, it's been a lot of fallout from
So I edited the Instagram story to say Scotty Sinclair at the top. And the quote is, I've seen this circulating around social media for a while now. I wasn't going to comment, it's absurd. Brackets, I would have been a child at the time. So this is Callum Hudson-Odoi. However, understanding my position as a role model, I'd like to make it absolutely clear that I've never been part of, and then here I doctored in, John Terry and Frank Lampard's post 9/11 bender. I've never been to Heathrow Travel Lodge instead of Epstein Island. So please stop tagging me in the post. Thank you. Yeah.
Justice for Scotty. Sorry, mate.
Well, we've cleared that one up, hopefully.
Cleared that up.
So,
yeah. Does make more sense because Frank Sinclair was at Chelsea.
Yeah, he was. Not at the time of the bender, but Scott Sinclair also did play for Chelsea, which is perhaps where they can keep
decade later.
In the academy.
All right. Good.
Yeah, anyway.
Right, well,
we can move forward now.
We can move forward.
fear of legal notices incoming. But yeah, back to this week's news. And Kylian Mbappe, who it looks like he's on the way out of PSG. And this impending exit is about as dignified and as discreet as you might imagine from a superstar like him. So obviously Kylian scored twice against Real Sociedad in the Champions League this week. But in Ligue 1, it's a different story. So PSG drew 0-0 with Monaco at the weekend and Kylian was subbed off at half time and he wasn't too happy about it. So instead of going to join his teammates on the bench in the second half, he instead came out and did a little circuit of the pitch dressed in his civvies and then went up and sat in the stands with his mum. And he was also sitting up there a few seats away from Nasser Al-Khelaifi, the PSG director, president. And I don't know, you could kind of debate this, the sort of sporting merits of the decision, but I also think it's quite symbolic of his position at the club that he's kind of less of a player and more of this like pampered medieval princeling who's like sat up in the stands overlooking his kingdom. There's more evidence of that the week before, because Kylian was at the Elysee Palace for a dinner with the French president Emmanuel Macron and the Emir of Qatar and Nasser Al-Khelaifi as well. And this has become a bit of an annual occurrence, Kylian rocking up to this sort of presidential audience. So in 2022, he was kind of like flirting with Real Madrid as he seems to do every year. And Macron invited him to this meeting. And afterwards, Kylian penned his latest like mega contract with PSG. And he was asked about it. And he said of the meeting, Macron told me, I want you to stay. I don't want you to leave now. You are so important for the country. Which it basically seems like PSG are employing the president of France as their sort of negotiator in contract talks with Kylian Mbappe, which is, I don't know, it's just quite mad.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine Rishi Sunak getting like Jude Bellingham in and being exactly. Like, please join City, which is, I guess, the equivalent.
Yeah. I don't know, it kind of shows just like how entwined football and politics are, especially with these like state-sponsored super clubs like PSG.
Oh, is it also because Mbappe is a bit of a sort of like statesman-like figure? He's clearly like quite bright, speaks a lot of languages, and he's mates with Macron, isn't he?
Is he?
Oh, yeah, supposedly.
They go for dinner every year.
Well, once a year, Macron takes him out and begs him to stay.
Yeah, do you think he's like advising
on energy policy? Yeah. Let's go nuclear, mate. Yeah. Warned you about Putin.
Yeah, well, actually, so Nasser Al-Khelaifi, the PSG president, was back at the Elysee Palace a couple of days later, but he was sat in on talks about brokering a ceasefire in Gaza.
What, with like Hamas? And
Yeah. So he was in with Macron again, which there was Barney Ronay in the Guardian described as a bit like the UK government insisting Dan Ashworth sits next to the US ambassador during talks on the Ukraine war.
Like Mike Ashley getting involved in the Good Friday Agreement.
Yeah, exactly. But also, like, I mean, this is a bizarre enough situation as it is, but I'm not sure that Nasser Al-Khelaifi is the calm and collected character that I'd want round the table for those talks. So, I mean, do you remember a few years ago, PSG got knocked out of the Champions League by Real Madrid, and I think there was some kind of controversial refereeing decision, I can't remember exactly. But after the game, Khelaifi was like storming around the back corridors of the stadium, like looking for the referee, accidentally burst into the Real Madrid dressing room and was like ranting and raving. And one of the Real Madrid backroom staff got out his phone and started filming him. And Khelaifi like smashed the phone out of his hand and screamed, "I'm going to kill you." Which, like, if that's how you react to an offside decision, then
I'm wait not, till you hear
not,
about
not,
it.
Not sure I want you to be the one that's negotiating peace in the Middle East, to be honest.
Yeah, he's pretty hot-headed.
Yeah. He's not. He wouldn't be my choice as a sort of diplomatic figure. Actually, I was looking into him a little bit, and I always imagined that Khelaifi was a sheikh or like the son of a sheikh or something. But he's actually from kind of a humble background. So his dad was a fisherman, or I say he was a fisherman. He was a pearl fisherman, which
was it precious stones
digging precious gems out of the ocean.
That's about as close to a fisherman as a Qatari citizen probably gets.
Yeah, exactly. But he then he played tennis and he was pretty good. I ended up in the I think he was in like the top 1,000 ATP rankings and represented Qatar at the Davis Cup, and ended up coaching the son of one of the emir of Qatar or the sheikh or something. And through that, he kind of got this position of influence and was appointed head of the Qatari Tennis Federation, and then became head of the QSI, the like Qatari Sports Investment Body, and also president of PSG.
Also, they bought PSG, he got installed.
Yeah.
That's actually quite impressive.
No, it is, yeah.
I thought he was just a sort of like
nobleman.
Yeah, whatever the equivalent is. A lot of medieval imagery in this.
Yeah.
The fiefdoms and Elysee palaces.
It is. I kind of feel like that is.
Yeah.
That world is quite.
Yeah, there's something feudal about the whole Mbappe thing, because they gave him that contract where they were like, you can veto transfers. It's probably why he feels like he can just do this slow ceremonial lap at the stadium in the middle of the game because he's been substituted. And yeah, he kind of acts like a slightly spoiled prince.
Yeah, he is just like a sort of a lord of his manor.
Yeah, right? They're not actually going to persuade him to stay again, are they? Sure, he's done this so many times.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I saw in the game against Monaco, I think, or possibly the Champions League one, the fans got out a banner that said Kylian Mbappe, like, get out now, or something. It was like, or can't wait for the 30th of June when his contract expires. Yeah. So, I mean, to be fair, like, they've been pretty patient. He's been stringing them along for a while. So,
yeah. My message to Khelaifi would be, spend your energy on the Middle East peace process.
Yeah.
Less on Mbappe. He's gone. That one's over. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about Quincy Promes, the former Ajax striker who's now been convicted of trafficking 1,300 kilos of cocaine, and also stabbing his cousin in the leg at a family barbecue. Charming guy. Quincy got a 7-year prison sentence in Netherlands court, but he's not serving it because he's in Russia, banging them in for Spartak Moscow and avoiding being deported to the Netherlands. There's no extradition treaty, so he can basically sit tight in Russia, safe in the knowledge that he won't get sent back to Holland to face his prison sentence. All he had to do was just stay in trouble. But last week, Spartak went on a warm weather training camp to Dubai, and Quincy got himself into a slight pickle. So on the last day of the training camp, the players were given a bit of free time. Some of them went and toured the gold market. Others went to a bottomless brunch wearing skinny white jeans. You know, whatever people do in Dubai.
Hung out in the mall.
Yeah, exactly. That's shopping. Yeah. That is basically it. Or there's always driving around in a hideous souped up car, and that's the option that Quincy went for. Unfortunately, this went slightly wrong when he caused a traffic accident and then did a runner from the scene, which is known as a hit and run in common parlance. And Quincy might have got away with it, but The next day, when he went to the airport to fly back to Russia, he was apprehended by some police who recognised him, obviously, from the incident.
Do you think his thinking when this accident happened was, fuck, I'm going to get extradited. Like, let's just leg it from the scene.
I think it probably was.
I'll be back in Russia by tomorrow.
Well, I'm picturing, and I have no idea whether he was doing this or not, I'm picturing him driving at, like, 150 miles an hour around the streets at, like, 4 a.m. swigging from a bottle of vodka.
Oh, come on, Quincy, just keep your head down just for a couple of years.
Do you think before he went to this training camp, his agent was like, look, whatever you do, just stay out of trouble?
Yeah, they probably thought Dubai was quite a safe bet. Like, it's quite hard to get hold of booze and, you know, there's no...
Where there's a will.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Quincy was arrested at the airport the next day and he was thrown in a Dubai slammer, which I've heard is not the most pleasant place to spend your time. But for him, it had a more ominous threat, which was getting extradited. Mm. And apparently the Netherlands did get in touch, being like, hey, this guy's meant to be in jail for cocaine trafficking. Do you mind sending him our way?
Yeah. Also, they hate cocaine trafficking in Dubai. Surely they'd be glad to get him off the streets.
Well, it looked pretty much like it was curtains for old Quince. But then, according to Russian press, Russian authorities intervened at a high level and he got off with a bit of house arrest and a fine.
So the Russian authorities at the high level not have more important things to be cracking on with?
Or like flattening the Donbass.
I'd have thought so.
Yeah, or anything. Like, I don't know, maybe Quincy's there.
It's this good thing that they're distracting themselves, perhaps. But
fewer drone strikes and more disgraced footballers on hit and run charges. Anyway, whoever it was, whether it was Putin or not, sounds like they've got him off the hook and he will be heading back to Russia and has avoided extradition. Once again, Quincy lives to fight another day and do another crime, probably.
Yeah. God, I do feel like it's a matter of time before he gets himself into some other scrape and ends up getting extradited, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's on thin fucking ice. Like, what's he going to do next? Go and stand outside the Kremlin in a Alexei Navalny t-shirt with an anti-war placard? He really doesn't know how to behave in this scenario.
Yeah.
It sounds like he is quite protected in Russia.
Yeah, although, from what I know about Russia, this is the kind of place that you can fall in and out of favour pretty quickly. Especially if you're doing hit and runs, trafficking cocaine,
stabbing people in the leg at barbecues. All right, well, I have a feeling that's not going to be the last we've heard of Quincy, so we'll keep you updated on his constant attempts to get himself jailed.
Just keep your head down, Quince.
Yeah, go on, Quince, if you're listening.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Staying in European football, I've got a story for you about the Germany and Union Berlin striker Kevin Volland. So if you don't know much about Kevin's backstory, Kevin grew up in a sleepy Bavarian hamlet called Markt Oberdorf. It's the kind of place where kindly omas will bake their strudels and leave them out on the porch to cool down. You'll have wizened shepherds like leading their flocks to graze on the village green. And the closest thing they've got to organised crime was a spate of knockdown ginger back in 1992. So You can imagine it was a bit of a shock to the system when Kevin signed for Union and moved to the bustling metropolis of Berlin. And yeah, so I think he kind of arrived this like bright-eyed, bushy-tailed country boy. And much like many bumpkins before him, he soon fell victim to a bit of petty crime. So after Union's recent win over Hoffenheim, Kevin decided to head out into the big city to celebrate with a currywurst and a pilsner. And I like to imagine that he sort of got to Alexanderplatz and he was, you know, getting his photo taken with the human statues and marveling at those little sticky men that you can throw out a window and they climb down.
Tourist tap. Yeah.
And this part is actually true. This like 16-year-old broke into a dance in front of him, and Kevin was like pretty overjoyed by this sight. Kind of started getting involved with the jig. At which point, this teenager slipped off his 180 grand watch and legged it down the street. Kevin is obviously very, very shocked by this, but luckily he was accompanied by his slightly more streetwise teammate, Jerome Roussillon, who chased the thief and managed to pin him down until the police arrived.
Oh, so did you get the watch back?
He did get the watch back. 180 grand watch. I don't think he noticed because he was so deep into one of those games where you have to guess the ball under the cup.
He was queuing up for the open top bus ride around Berlin. Checking out the flyers for a pub crawl.
So it does have a happy ending.
They caught the
teenage pickpocket thief,
and Kevin learned a vital lesson about life in the big city.
Yeah, you don't get that back in Markt Oberdorf.
No, you do not. You also don't get 180 gram watches.
No, I said, to be honest, whenever I read about these stories about these watches, like, who and why would you own and wear a 180 grand watch? Like, how nice can it be?
Did he just buy off a bloke in a long trench coat in Alexanderplatz? Folex.
While he was having a charcoal caricature of himself.
You're buying one of those like metro maps, but where it's pubs instead of stations. T-shirt saying Berlin. Yeah. It's nice to have a naive footballer like that.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's sweet. I mean, hopefully he's learned his lesson.
Mm. This is very tenuously related, but did you ever see that picture of Jamie Carragher's dad? They went to New York for New Year's Eve, and they went, there's like a Carragher's bar there, and they got a photo outside, and Jamie Carragher's dad is holding a super drug plastic bag, which means he must have brought him from home. He's just walking around New York with a super drug carrier bag. Always really enjoyed that. All right, this episode is heavy on European football, because I've got another one for you. Italian football has been rocked by many scandals in recent years. Doping, match fixing, betting. Those Juve ultras, you got hold of a surface-to-air missile. Do you remember that?
That was insane. Yeah.
Google it, actually, if you haven't seen the picture of this ballistic missile that the police found belonging to some football hooligans.
Yeah, quite a horrible group. I don't know. It's like, what are they going to do with that?
Invade Switzerland? Like
destroy? Either destroy the San Siro.
Yeah, maybe sell it to Gaddafi. I don't know. They're wrongins. But now there's a new spectre haunting Serie A. And that is PlayStation addiction. So Italy manager Luciano Spalletti has come out and complained about his players having these Dorito-fueled late-night gaming sessions. He's worried it's affecting their performances. And so he's banned his squads from gaming while they're on international duty. And he told them, you come here to win European championships, not to win at Call of Duty. So he's pissed off. And I can understand that, because apparently it's really common that players will play like late into the night, like early hours, and then they'll kind of turn up for training bleary-eyed. Which actually is, do you remember Jadon Sancho? Successive managers complained that he would turn up late for training because he'd been up all night gaming.
Wasn't he quite shit as well?
Yeah, so there was this teenager who posted a picture on Twitter of himself beating Sancho 4-1 at FIFA, and the timestamp was 2:47 a.m. And the guy put as the caption, "Go to bed, bro." Which, when even like the 12-year-old in Malaysia who's like high on Monster energy drinks is telling you to go to bed, it's time to stop gaming. And also another detail from that screenshot is that Sancho's team are called Dior 11. Which is slightly tragic, I thought. Anyway, it's a known thing about Sancho that he's sort of like up too late doing it. And another player who's afflicted by this addiction is former West Ham man Gianluca Scamacca, the striker. You remember, it didn't really work out for him at West Ham, and he's now on a dismal run of form at Atalanta. And the press are blaming this on his addiction to Fortnite and other quality video games. Corriere della Sport, the Italian newspaper, reported that his late night sessions mean he's playing like a foreign body who's rolling into other worlds. So I think they mean a sort of like dazed ghost with like square eyes.
Imagine him coming in just with sort of like shell shocked, like expecting grenades to drop around him and someone's gonna pop out from behind the like alcove with an AK-47.
You know, you hit, like occasionally hear those stories in the press about like a Chinese teenager who's been playing for like a week straight. It's just like soiling himself in his beanbag in his gaming dungeon. And when they emerge, they like can't really distinguish real life from the game. That's kind of the impression I'm getting. But to be fair, it could be worse because Scamacca, his family are a bunch of absolute wrong-uns. So his dad a few years ago broke into Roma's training ground and demanded money from whoever was like on reception. And when they refused, he went on a rampage. He destroyed several cars in the car park. He destroyed a statue of a wolf and a bonsai tree trophy, which was for years, that was the only trophy Roma had won until they won the Conference League. It was like some friendly tournament. So it was a treasured bonsai tree. And bonsais are hard to keep alive, let me tell you. So it was a serious crime. And I think actually his dad and other relatives, they're kind of involved in organized crime. So his granddad, a few months after his dad's rampage, Scamacca's granddad stumbled into a Rome bar with a knife in his hand and held it to a punter's throat. I think he was quite smashed at the time. Yeah. And he was eventually taken away and thrown in the slammer. So I think basically playing a bit too much Animal Crossing seems like quite a tame.
Yeah, I think keep him locked away in his bedroom. He's safer there.
Yeah, maybe just a bit of GTA. Yeah. That's probably the best for him. And actually, speaking of GTA, he's not the only gamer to indulge in that crime-riddled world. Hugo Lloris, the Spurs keeper, he's joined LAFC in the MLS. And he was doing an interview this week and they were like, you know, how are you finding living in LA? It's obviously like, you know, very different experience to North London. And I think Lloris was kind of trying to sound like quite worldly wise. And he said like, yeah, I really know LA because I play GTA so much on PlayStation that I felt like I knew all the landmark streets and corners of the city, even though I've never been here. I guess he's referring to San Andreas, that GTA one. That's like a,
yeah. Was it, so did he arrive there and was he expecting to just be able to just drag people out of their pickup trucks and beat them up with a baseball bat and just drive off, and the police will maybe follow you for 20 minutes and then they'll give up as long as you don't do anything again.
Then you just grab a helicopter and just like fly over the city. You must think LA is a fucking crime riddled shithole if that's his perception. But it's based on GTA.
Yeah, it's filled with like strip clubs and gangsters like murdering each other.
Yeah, although probably his other perception of LA is that it's really sunny. Like, that's half the point of going at the end of your career. You're like, oh, California, I'll get sun all year round. But did you see the footage from Hugo's second game at LAFC? They were away to Real Salt Lake City in Utah, and they played a match in the mother of all blizzards. So they turned up, the match was delayed by a couple of hours because the snow was so deep and they were trying to clear it. And then the game started and 4 minutes in, some lightning struck the pitch. So they suspended for another hour and then they did play the match and it was a heavy blizzard. There's some amazing footage of Lloris, he's just let in a goal and his head is just like covered in snow. There's like a pile of snow on his head and he's just got this look of absolute disbelief on his face, just like, when did I sign up for this?
Yeah, the footage is great. Actually reminded me of, do you remember a couple of years ago the US organized one of their World Cup qualifiers in, I think it was in Real Salt Lake City as well, And it felt like, I think they knew what they were doing because they were playing against like Honduras or someone and they weren't doing very well in qualifying. So there was sort of like, yeah, we just bring out a few dirty tricks. They organized the game in rail in like Salt Lake City. And it was like minus 25 degrees or something. There was this amazing photo of the US team's goalkeeper with like icicles coming off his beard.
Yeah, cartoons.
Yeah.
And there was a video someone took a water bottle out of a fridge and you just watch it freeze in like 10 seconds.
What were these poor Honduras players thinking?
Turning up in like Acapulco shirts and shorts, stepping off the plane in their Panama hats, just being hit by a blizzard.
Yeah.
Do you think that is a deliberate dirty trick? It's like how Bolivia like never lose at home because they're at 3,000 metres altitude.
Nobody can even breathe, let alone play football.
Yeah, just starve them of oxygen. I wonder if Real Salt Lake City have a similar ploy.
Yeah.
Anyway, certainly not a mission that Hugo had played on GTA. He was not prepared for the snow. They lost 3-0, by the way.
So, Jack, I'm afraid this podcast has been very fun so far, but I have to interrupt it to bring you some breaking news from Anchorage, Alaska. And I hope that I don't alarm any of our listeners of a nervous disposition, but I'm sorry to report that there is a moose on the loose. Not in this hoose in Anchorage, Alaska. Or more accurate, the moose was on the loose. It's no longer on the loose. But I am, of course, referring to this year's most hotly anticipated sporting event, the Iditarod Sled Dog Race. So, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the Iditarod, it's an Alaskan race that takes place every year. It's been going since 1973. And it's a dog sled race, so mushers, who are the dog sled drivers, whatever you call them, riders, jockeys, and they have like a pack of 12 to 16 dogs that will pull them along on their sled, and they have to complete this like 1,500 kilometer course through the Alaskan wilderness. It normally takes between 8 to 15 days, depending on conditions and stuff. According to Wikipedia, they often race through blizzards, causing whiteout conditions, sub-zero temperatures, and gale-force winds, which can cause wind chill to reach minus 73 degrees. So,
can you be out in the open at minus 73?
Yeah, I mean, just about, it sounds like. So, it's pretty gnarly event at the best of times. But this year's race got off to a pretty ominous start when the race leader, Jesse Holmes, turned up at the first checkpoint and pretty shell-shocked and warned of a rogue moose on the course. So he went over to the cameraman and said, "I had to punch a moose in the nose out there." And then got slid away, pulled away by his dogs without explaining it anymore. But there was worse to come when five-time champion Dallas Seavey crossed the finish line drenched in blood with bits of moose intestine frozen to his coonskin cap. And it turned out that what happened was he'd been going along on his sled and this unruly moose careered across the course and got entangled in the ropes of his sled and was like thrashing around, injuring his dogs. And he ended up having to shoot the moose. And then, according to race rules, he then had to gut the moose out there so that...
Why is that a rule?
I think it's actually like a kind of environmental or maybe like sort of historical, like respect for nature kind of thing. That you can't just kill it. I guess it's also to just discourage them from killing mooses that are just in their way.
Well, it's like, well, if you kill it, you're going to have to eviscerate
exactly.
it.
I mean, I imagine this took quite a long time. Didn't do much for his race time.
Yeah, and quite bleak as well. Minus 73 on your knees, just scooping organs.
Yeah.
I reckon it's to deter predators.
From the course.
Yeah.
But surely the predators...
Wolves and whatever else.
It's going to attract the predators more because the smell's going to travel, no?
Oh yeah, and what happens to the guts as well?
The gut, I don't know. I think you just leave the guts there and then the organisers come along and collect the carcass.
George?
It's to reduce spoilage and to preserve the meat. So if you've got all the guts in it overnight, it will go rancid and weird and the meat will be unusable. So it's
you're a fountain of knowledge.
It's a meat prevention.
Top of my head. Yeah. Hang on, so
who eats it then? Someone comes up behind him and eats the moose.
I don't know. I guess maybe it's one of those old outdated rules, and it's as Zach sort of said, respect to the moose that it will get used rather than just be completely wasted.
I think this like dog sled racing was sort of an Inuit thing, and they're very much about like, you know, valuing and respecting nature. You can't just like kill animals for the sake of it. I think it's like if you kill it, you got to eat it, which I agree with.
Yeah. I wonder, is moose delicious?
I have never tasted it.
Immediately Googles, is moose delicious?
If you have tasted moose and you're listening, do write in. I'd be interested to know.
Maybe we can get in contact with the organisers of the Iditarod.
Yeah, is that moose still going?
Send us a little fillet steak.
I'm picturing kind of a bit sort of wild boar-like. Dark meat. Venison.
Yeah, a bit like venison.
Maybe. It's almost a deer, isn't it?
It's like a cross.
I'd like it as like biltong.
Yeah, I think by the time it gets here, it's going to be built up.
According to Quora, moose compared with beef is strongly musky and slightly sharp and sour. It has a much muskier flavour and is much less sour than venison, but muskier and a bit less sour than elk. Brackets, it's delicious.
Less musky than elk now.
Yeah, of course.
I can picture it.
Yeah, obviously I had a pretty musky elk the other day. So.
Yeah, well, thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah, no worries.
Sounds delicious. Maybe we'll try some at some point. Maybe the live show will sell some moose biltong.
Moose casserole.
Straight from the Iditarod. Hang on, so what back at the race, so what happened? So he had to gut the moose.
He had to gut the moose, and then he completed the race, or he made it to the next checkpoint. That's drenched in moose blood.
That's a hell of a hazard.
It is.
Probably takes ages as well. They're quite big.
Yeah, they're like, mooses are like upwards of half a ton.
Yeah.
So.
Should have just punched it in the nose like the guy before. Do you think the guy before, he goes, I had to punch a moose in the nose. Is that like a known, don't they say that about sharks? Punch them in the nose. I have to say, when you first mentioned a dog sled race as a topic for the pod, featuring a moose, I was sceptical.
But I'd quite like to make it a regular feature. Updates from the dog sled racing world.
Yeah, pretty soon on our Tuesday episodes, we'll have a dog sled race. This will be exclusively
dog sled racing.
Starting with the 1973 race. How common is the moose hazard?
Not very often. Not very common, apparently. So there was one other time that somebody killed a moose in 1985.
Proper drama.
That time, she killed the moose with an axe, which is even more.
Well, she just hacked away.
Yeah, I think the moose killed a few of her dogs, and then she had to kill it with an axe.
Fucking hell! Could they kill the jockey?
I guess in the same way that like a cow could kill a person.
Yeah, if they're killing the dogs.
Yeah,
that would also really handicap you for the rest of the race if you lost a few dogs.
Yeah, so actually I went deep down the Iditarod rabbit hole. In order to finish the race, you have to have at least 5 dogs left.
Oh, God.
Which, obviously, they're very concerned about the welfare of dead moose, but perhaps less so about their mongrel huskies.
That rule doesn't imply a great survival rate for poor huskies, if they are huskies. I love that he's called Dallas Seavey as well. Yeah. That story's got everything.
Yeah, it does, yeah. Yeah, he leaves the Premier League, eh?
Yeah, exactly. That's real drama. Okay, after last week's episode on Formula One's biggest wrong-uns, stories Drive to Survive won't tell you, we had a few letters, and we had a great one from Peter, who writes, I really enjoyed your F1 edition. Adding to James Hunt's dubious roster, he was once caught short on an intercontinental flight and relieved himself against a curtain separating first class from the rest of the passengers. Unfortunately, the revered TV presenter and child safety campaigner Esther Ranson was sitting adjacent to said curtain and received a bit of a soaking. Sacrilege. I mean, that having read up on James Hunt, none of that still really surprises me, but quite unfortunate for poor Esther Ranson to be there.
I think she's probably somebody who would take it quite well.
She's quite fiery.
Do you think? Yeah.
I think you get a bollocking.
Okay, I don't know much about her. I was just thinking about the child safety campaigner side. Maybe she's just tolerant of pissing.
I think she'd give you a real bollocking. She's quite hard. Yeah. And as I said, James Hunt, he probably did that numerous times, but can you imagine just sitting on a plane and suddenly you get pissed on?
Yeah. Or even just being on a plane and just having the thought process that it's just fine to just piss on the car.
Poor old Esther. But hey, that's life.
Yeah.
Not, however, the worst plane antics that we've talked about from F1 this week. That would probably belong to Christian Horner wanking in the loo en route to Dubai, which I discussed in my little fireside chat on Friday. And George wrote in, pointing out another horrible little detail from the Horner leaked cache of messages, which is that there's an exchange where Horner's phone call to his employee about 10:30 p.m. goes unanswered. And then Horner just texts her saying, "Wanted you to hear the fireball," which you can use your imagination of what the fireball might be. But yeah, thanks for writing in, and please keep your letters coming. Contact at upshot.email or at Upshot Towers on social media, and we'll keep reading them out.
Yes, we will. Got another follow-up, actually. So on our NFL pod before the Super Bowl, we told you about Chiefsaholic, the Kansas City Chiefs superfan who got himself into a itsy-wincy bit of trouble by robbing banks on away trips. So this was Xavier Babudar, who used to attend the Chiefs games dressed as a wolf. He was quite like famous among the fans, for they'd always spot him at games. And at some point, Xavier decided to put his wolf costume to another use and use it as a disguise when robbing banks. So he did this about 6 or 7 times until the police put 2 and 2 together and realised that these bank robberies were coinciding with cities that the Chiefs were playing in. And frankly, Xavier was the only one dressed as a wolf costume, dressed in a wolf costume in town that day. And so they very quickly rumbled him. It doesn't sound like the sharpest tool in the shed.
Wasn't he also bragging online that he hustles in private or something?
Oh, yeah.
People were like, "How are you affording all these away trips?" And he's like, "I hustle."
In a way, he does.
Yeah, I can't argue with that.
But anyway, Xavier is now on trial and he's pleaded guilty. And it looks like he's going to get a 50-year sentence. So sorry to report that, but there's a funny moment from the trial. So on the first day of his trial, he just announced he was going to plead guilty, and his lawyer came down onto the steps outside the courtroom to speak to the press and said this:
"The government has been blitzing and Xavier's pocket was collapsing. But today, Xavier stepped into the pressure. He took responsibility for his actions. He stood up in court, humble and repentant, and admitted what he had done. Now, if I know anything about Xavier, and if the Chiefs Kingdom knows anything about Chiefsaholic, we know that he doesn't give up. We know that if he stumbled and he fell, he didn't let his knee touch the ground. And that's because he's capable of doing a great thing. And he knows that there's still hope. We still have a lot of work to do on his case, but Xavier wants everyone to know that he loves the Chiefs Kingdom. He loves Kansas City, and he hopes that you'll rally to his support. Thank you, and God bless."
So it makes it sound like Xavier is some sort of like civil rights activist. Yeah. He's like taking a proud stand.
Yeah, like Martin Luther King before him. He never let his knee touch the ground. About 5 seconds into that, I was like, fuck, he's obviously hired some amazing barrister. And then after about 20 seconds, I was like, is this just his mate? Are you even a lawyer?
It's like this, he's not like an American hero. He's like a violent bank robber.
In a way, he is following the American dream.
Yeah, I suppose.
Because it looks a lot like an older version of McLovin from Superman.
McLovin. Yeah. When he's like, "Xavier is capable of doing great things," like robbing banks.
Sounds like he's like the chief star player who's out with a hamstring injury. It's like we just rally around him, and we know Chief Zalek will be back to do great things.
I actually can see Chiefs Kingdom coming to his support. Yeah. It would be quite fun if it was your team.
Yeah,
to like hold up like a TIFO for the guy.
Yeah.
So he's facing 50 years. What's the point of that speech? Is he trying to get a bit of clemency from the judge? Like,
I have no idea.
He's hoping loads of guys in wolf costumes come and sit in the gallery and plead the judge to
storm the Capitol for him.
Yeah, it feels a bit like that. Also, Xavier. Is that how you... The name's spelled like caviar with an X.
Yeah.
But I thought it was just Xavier.
Yeah, Zav.
Xavier. But maybe in America, Is it Dr. X from X-Men? Isn't he Charles Xavier?
Yeah.
Is this guy named after him? It's very possible.
That's how you end up in a life of bank robbery.
Yeah, dressed as a wolf.
Yeah, dressed as a wolf. We'll drop a link in the show notes to the picture because it is world class. Just the side-by-side of him at Chiefs game and then in a bank robbing in a wolf same costume. The wolf in Chiefs clothing. So, I absolutely love that story so much. All right, well, justice for Chiefs Aholic. Yeah. We very much hope he doesn't get 50 years. American sentences are mental, aren't they? Quincy Promise is getting 7.5 for stabbing his cousin and trafficking a ton of cocaine.
Yeah. 7 or 8 bank robberies is quite a lot.
I mean, it's quite a lot. Does he have a gun?
Yeah, he had a gun.
Or just his claws, his fangs, and blowing down their house with his wolf breath. Right. Finally, Pep Guardiola has only just finished apologising to Calvin Phillips for calling him fat, and he's already moved on to insulting other Man City players. So Phil Foden turned in a man of the match performance against Man United on the weekend, and Pep was asked about him, and instead of, you know, praising his amazing ball control and finishing ability, he basically called him thick. He said, "Football, he lives for it. The pressure for Phil is if he had to do a press conference about the last book he read. But football, he loves it." It's a pretty big dig. And actually, I watched a couple of other interviews he gave, and he cracked the same joke in an interview with like some foreign broadcaster as well. So it's obviously like a predetermined line that he was going to slag Phil Foden off for not reading.
That is really funny.
Yeah. I have this image of Pep trying to get Phil into reading and like explaining to him what like magical realism is.
We started out with these Biff and Chip books. We're going to slowly work up The Worst Witch. And then
we tried the Alex Rider series.
This is young adult fiction. Taking him to the library. Yeah, I don't know.
Poor old Phil.
Is it just a running gag, do you think, in the Man City changing?
Do you think he has these jokes about every player and he just occasionally he lets his guard slip and just starts cracking?
Yeah, I don't know. It feels quite calculated, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, especially if he's repeated it multiple times.
Poor old Phil. All right, well, I think that's all we've got for today. Thanks for listening. Remember, live show, 12th of June, Putney. We will be revealing the biggest wrong-un starring in the Euros and or talking about England's greatest wrong-uns ever. Probably a mix, plus some sordid stories. Pick up your tickets using the link in the show notes. We will see you there. Thanks, Zach.
Thank you, Jack.
Thanks, George.
Cheers, mate.
And thanks for listening.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.